What's up, everybody? Welcome into the How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast, hosted by your two favorite youth pastors, talking every single week about how little they know about youth ministry. Derek, how you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I could complain, but I won't.
Isn't there a Bible verse about do things without grumbling?
Probably. That sounds like...
That's probably why.
Is that first or second opinions?
No, it's actually legit. It's actually legit. It's so legit, I don't even know where it is, but I want to say Philippians.
It's too legit to quit?
That was the slogan on the back of our senior t-shirts in high school.
It was not.
Yes, it was.
Oh my gosh.
What can I say? We're awesome.
You're too cliche. Are you looking it up?
Yep. I want to say it's Philippians, and I was right. Philippians 2, 14 through 15, do everything without complaining and arguing. So maybe a little out of context, but I digress.
What would this podcast be if we were not out of context a little bit?
Hey, I realize I'm wrong. Our senior t-shirts did not say too legit to quit. That was the year before us. That was 2012.
Okay, so what were yours?
I really don't care to share because it's even worse. So fresh and so clean, the class of 2013.
Please be joking.
I'm not. I was not on the t-shirt committee, but it was definitely, it was there.
Wow.
It was not great.
I can proudly say that I did not care enough at the time to... for me to remember now what was on the t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, I can see you. Here's a nice picture from you in high school, wearing your Letterman jacket with your class ring, holding a yearbook. Just done.
For sure, no. Nope. By the end of my senior year, I pretty much viewed myself as graduating from our church youth group, not from my high school, because I cared so little about my high school. It was...
You hear that, students? That's the standard we're going after.
We want you to view your high school as just dead to you.
Yeah.
And view your church youth group as your true high school experience.
Well, well done.
Yeah. You should spend your every waking moment with your youth group, your youth pastor, just hanging out, talking about the Bible.
Yeah.
That's, I think...
That's what does it for today, I think.
That's the episode right there. Oh, no. Now, we're going to talk about baptism today. And to start off, Derek, we'll ask the quick question.
What's the longest you've ever held your breath underwater?
What's the Office episode where Erin is got her head in the bucket of water? And they're like, oh, my gosh, we think she's unconscious. And she, like, comes launching up. She's like, I ate two whole apples. Like, that is not what bobbing for apples is.
Oh, that show is too good.
No. Not a sponsor. Oh, speaking of, great value purified drinking water.
Oh, I did not know it was purified.
Yeah, it's with flavor-enhancing minerals, too, so it's probably going to kill me.
I love some good minerals in my water.
Yep, but made of purified water, calcium chloride, and sodium bicarbonate.
Praise the Lord.
So thank you to good friends of the show, Walmart, for giving us some
great value
water.
Purified drinking water.
Yep. Not a sponsor... Where was I going with that?
I have no clue. I never do. I just try and match your energy. You got a quick question. You got a quick question of the day.
I did have a quick question of the day, and then I was going to go on a side tangent. So I think we'll just go for the main tangent.
Okay, that's cool.
Of the quick question
that's
of the day.
That's a good plan.
Derek, baptism. What what were your experiences? Experience or experiences? Talk about getting dunked.
Well, I was first sprinkled.
Sure.
I was first sprinkled. I grew up in a Chester family. If you're not familiar with Chester, Christmas and Easter only until I was about 13 years old. So as such, I had the infant baptism where they sprinkle some water on your head and you get dressed in nice clothes and soil them and all those kinds of good things.
Obviously.
Yep. So that was my first experience with that. Then I... got saved at 13, and so I got baptized in water my senior year when I kind of understood that, okay, like this is something for me. I chose that. But then what was really cool, which whether this counts or not, I'm not entirely sure, but when I was in Israel, definitely got baptized in the Jordan because that's epic and amazing. So we kind of like in a group full of pastors. Say,
I don't know if this counts or not.
I'm sure we're going to get into the multiple baptism discussion at some point. And like the reason I don't know if it counts, like I obviously did it in such a way that like there's a lot of like powerful significance to that and just like a cool moment. It wasn't like I just feel like I need to show my fellow North Central Bible University students that I believe in Jesus as I just graduated with a pastoral degree. It wasn't like
it was still up in the air at that point.
It was not necessarily to show the world that I believe in Jesus as I firmly do. It was more so just there was a cleansing and just a power of that moment that I did it for. So I'm kind of just putting the cart before the horse here. But so yeah, technically I've been baptized 3 times.
So, ironically enough, I also am in the 3-baptism club.
Nice.
Similar story. I was baptized as an infant in the Lutheran church that my parents attended at the time.
Fantastic.
I don't know if I've ever shared this on the podcast, but effectively what happened was when I was 6, the fun version of the story is that my parents were kind of looking for a new church. And the church, the Lutheran church we were going to, didn't have air conditioning, and that Sunday was supposed to be 100 degrees. So they were like, we're not going there. And in the phone book, the write-up for the Baptist church in town said air-conditioned. So they went there.
Solid.
And that's where they were for the next 15 years, 20 years.
Wow.
So that was really funny, but... They and that church eventually they moved, dropped the name, became non-denominational. And so then that was where when I was a freshman in high school, I got baptized, kind of, you know, my own decision, is how I describe it, kind of the believer's baptism or whatever you mm-hmm. want to call it. And then same trip, I think it was the year before, right? I was in Israel 1 year before you were, and baptized in the Jordan River. And I always describe that one as kind of my baptism into ministry.
Oh, absolutely.
It serves no theological purpose whatsoever, but it was just kind of a cool opportunity for us as we were, like everybody that was on that trip, or at least almost everybody, were people that were going into ministry positions. Yep. And so it was kind of a cool moment for us to be able to baptize each other in the Jordan River as kind of an affirmation of the calling that God had on our lives.
That was one of the coolest experiences. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of grazed over it, but there was just the very idea that Jesus did this exact same thing was just like it hits.
Yeah.
And when you see the Jordan, like, you know, we grew up in Minnesota here. When I thought of the Jordan, as someone who's just familiar with the Mississippi, mm-hmm. you think of this huge, massive river. But the Jordan, where we were anyway, was more of a deep stream. You know, I mean, it was not more than 10 to 15 feet wide. And it was one of the coolest experiences.
This is not what we planned on talking about.
Is it ever?
But I'm going to do it anyway. The baptism of Jesus. So yep. we've had several people over the years say that some of their favorite episodes that we do are the episodes
debunking,
where we kind of debunk stuff or dive into random stuff. It's always very fun. And the story of Jesus's baptism, I mean, that itself, we're not debating, like, yes, Jesus got baptized. We're not debating that. But there is if you go to Israel today, you can go to, like, they have, like, a spot set up. Like, this is where Jesus got baptized in the Jordan River. How cool. You can get baptized here, too. And it's a great tourist attraction. but it's not where Jesus got baptized. Good friends of the show, Mark Turnage of Biblical Expeditions, who's kind of the organization that he is associated with. If you ever go to Israel, go with them.
They say, AKA an absolute literal genius.
Dude is a legend.
Yep.
Has studied the Bible, the land of the Bible, to ridiculous levels. And I want to go back to Israel, but I would never go if I wasn't with him, because I wouldn't truly trust that I was actually getting the right information. Maybe there's some trust issues there I should explore with a therapist.
Maybe.
And so basically, I'll try to break this down quickly because we didn't plan on talking about this, but the Jordan River runs in between modern day Israel and Jordan,
mm-hmm.
and it has the Jordan River has three headwaters. There's the spring at Dan, I know is one of them. The snow melting off of Mount Hermon is the second one, and I don't remember the third one off the top of my head. But the point is that all three of, I think it's another spring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which one. But the point is that all three of these water features mm-hmm. that kind of spark the Jordan River are what biblically you'd refer to as living water. They are natural, like rain, you know, precipitation, that leads to a river, a fresh spring that leads to a river. Those are fresh. That's living water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the Jordan flows down into the Sea of Galilee. And then on the north side, and then on the south side of the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River comes back out and continues on to the Dead Sea. And so if you just think of it like a straight line from north to south, you know, Jordan River into the Sea of Galilee, and then yep. Jordan River again into yep. the Dead Sea. There is a river, another river, which I believe is called the Yarmouk River. And I am looking on Google Maps, and it's not helping me at all. But I believe it's called, you know what, hold on.
This is great radio.
It is great radio.
I have...
How in the world do you have that so closely accessible?
I keep it in my bag at all times.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my word.
So when we went to Israel, we had... Do you even still have yours?
Yeah, it's just okay, on my bookshelf. When you spend 15 hours highlighting stuff you don't understand, just throw it away.
No, you do not. So what Derek is referencing here, we have this like little booklet of a bunch of maps of the Holy Land, all throughout Israel. And part of our pre-Israel homework was to go through this stupid book and highlight in different colors a whole bunch of different stuff. Geographical features.
Full disclosure, like you might be thinking like, oh, that'd actually be interesting. It is for the first 2 hours. And then after a while, you're like, I just need to get this done. I don't even know what I'm highlighting, but here we go.
Derek jokingly said like 15 hours.
No.
I don't think that was far off.
No.
It was probably about 15 hours.
Yeah, I was being for real.
And so it is the Yarmouk River that flows from Jordan, so east of Israel. It flows from Jordan, and it connects, it joins up with the Jordan River just south of the lake of the Sea of Galilee. And so the thing about the Yarmouk River is that it is not what you would refer to as living water. And Jewish ritual cleansings, or what we would call baptisms, had to take place in living water. And so because the Yarmouk River connects with the Jordan River just south of the Sea of Galilee, anything in the Jordan River beyond that point is not considered living water. Because it's mixed with the Yarmouk River. It is south of that point where this whole tourist location is set up. And so we can definitively say there's no way Jesus would have gotten baptized where that tourist location is set up, because Jesus would have gotten baptized you know, in living water in the Jordan River. And so what we did on our trip is that, you know, our professor, Mark Turnage, is explaining all of this. So we drive in the bus to the middle of nowhere where there's this little stream running through a prairie.
We actually were in Jeeps. So we took Jeeps.
Oh, that's sweet. Actually, you know what? We may have been... I thought our Jeep day was a different day. Maybe it was the same day.
Here's what I also know, and this is what they mentioned to us. Depending where it was, you couldn't currently access where Jesus probably was because of current line disputes.
Yeah, like political
scene. Many people know, I mean, Israel is an absolute literal war zone all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, not an active war zone, but there's always issues up there because north of the Sea of Galilee, you have Syria that borders Israel. And for those that don't know, they don't get along very well. And then you have Jordan up there as well. And so depending where it is, there's a decent chance you could get to where...
Lebanon not... They're directly north of Israel, and they're not... I'm blanking on the organization that is currently in control up there, but they are not, I mean, a terrorist organization would be what you would refer to them as, and they're bent on destroying all Jewish people, and we don't like that. No. Don't do that, but I'm blanking on the name. It's not important, but... Anyways, I was just going to say, like, our whole experience in Israel was like, we get bussed over or jeeped over or whatever to this random location, and then we hear a lecture on, here's this tourist spot that there's no way Jesus actually got baptized there, and here, let's dive into why.
Yep.
And then let's dive into why this location over here is actually probably a lot closer to where Jesus got baptized, which, oh, by the way, is where we are right now.
Yep.
So if you want to go get baptized in the Jordan River, much closer to where Jesus got baptized, you can do that. And our whole experience in Israel was like that. It was like, we're going to debunk the touristy spots and tell you what actually happened.
Yeah.
And which was incredible.
Uh-huh. I think you and I would both say that we highly recommend it. Regardless of where you're at, even if you're not, maybe I know a lot of people listening to this are ministry people, but I don't, I mean, I went on that trip in 2017. So this would have been 7 years now. And I mean, I still think about many of the events that we went on. As a matter of fact, I've used a lot of what I've learned in sermons recently, even. It is a wealth of knowledge, and the best way I can explain it is kind of like you go over there and it's kind of like the knowledge you get is like a coffee filter where it just slowly kind of seeps into your system. Because I remember walking out of there going like, I was gone for 2.5 weeks and I don't even know what I've actually learned. And then the more I've sat on it and gone back, I was like, oh my gosh, that makes sense now. So highly recommend going, and we should send a podcast on Israel. That would have been awesome.
We should. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do that. The other thing that I'll point out about Jesus's baptism was that, all of the earliest depictions of Jesus's baptism he was the only one in the water. Like, the modern, like pastor dunking baptizee is a new thing in Jesus's day. Like, John the Baptist was standing on the shore, Jesus waded out into the water and dunked himself, and that was what everybody would have done, which is interesting.
Yeah, because how it reads officially is baptized by John,
right? Which is, you know, how they would have described it.
Yep,
but
interesting.
John wouldn't actually be in the water, which that way of doing baptism. Makes, like, you know, when it says in the Bible, like, 3,000 were baptized that day. Well, it's a lot easier to do that if they don't all have to go in a single file line to one person.
Yeah.
They can all kind of wade in and do it themselves.
Well, and to kind of then transition into, like, where we're going, I think something that I learned when I was in Israel is, you know, we think of baptism as this monumental one-time deal. This is what it looks like. And for the true intent of what it's intended to be, that's correct. But what is easy to miss is, Kyle mentioned it earlier, ritual cleansing was something that was a regular part of life. And we're not talking about like wash your hands before dinner. We're talking like if you touch anything unclean, if you do anything that's unholy, if you do anything that is going to violate your ceremonial ceremonial cleanliness, good grief, you would have to go and baptize or immerse yourself in these ritual baths. And then you'd have to have a period of, how would you explain it? Where a cool down period where you just don't do anything because you're still unclean until a certain amount of days pass, and then you're all of a sudden clean again. And so it was fascinating to me that baptismals, or these, I can't remember what the official word is.
Mikvahs.
Thank you. These mikvahs are all over the place. Like every single town, mm-hmm. there's multiple in every single town.
A lot of times there were areas where like every house would have their own.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fascinating to kind of see that it makes, because the Pharisees, that was their big deal, right? That's where they like really hammered home, like you're unclean, you're unclean, you're unclean, you're unclean. You have to go wash yourself essentially. And that's where you see a lot of this. And so I think you kind of trace that back and then go, Jesus was baptized in the Jordan. He was not necessarily to be ceremonial clean. But what's super, super interesting is I love how John kind of is like, Jesus, like, I got to be baptized by you. And without having it in front of me, the Lord essentially says, like, we have to do this to fulfill all righteousness, you know, which is basically like, this is how it's got to be, you know. And that's where I think it's cool that Kyle and I both feel like this was our baptism into ministry, because then from there we know that Jesus goes into the wilderness and then into his ministry, which is super, super cool. But after all that is said, how does baptism play into 2024 and our students and our adults and everything else?
Yeah, and so I want to start... It's maybe fitting for us to start the conversation here because we were both baptized as infants. And the first conversation that has to be had when talking about baptism in the church is the disagreement amongst denominations of infant baptism versus adult baptism. You know, when should you get baptized? And I think it's important to note that pretty much every church does the same two things. Or they have two elements at roughly the same time periods for kids that grow up in the church.
Mm-hmm.
They just might do them, you know, in different orders. And so in like something like the Catholic Church, they'll have infant baptism, and then when you're an infant, and then they'll also do like later on, you know, around 11, 12, 13, they'll do a confirmation class. And the point of all of this is your parents are your parents are baptizing you as an infant as a symbol of their faith and adopting you into their faith and their intention to raise you in that faith. Confirmation class then is effectively you making the choice on your own to say that I'm confirming the choice that my parents made when I was growing or when I was younger is kind of the idea. Other denominations will flip that, and this is what both my church and Derek's church does, is that they'll do child dedications when you're an infant. I'll get into the biblical side of it later, but you know, parents saying like there's no baptism involved, but it's saying we are dedicating to raise this child in the church with, you know, like to follow Jesus with those values. And then when the child is older, they make the decision themselves to get baptized. Does that, like, am I missing anything here?
No, I do want to kind of draw this line in the sand too, because here's the reason there's so much disagreement. Because there is disagreement. Like this is not just a different way of doing things necessarily. I would say I had to look this up because I didn't want to do anything that was inherently incorrect.
Well, no, we do our research during the show, so absolutely. That makes sense.
This was super interesting to me. This is from, I'm not going to say exactly which one it is, but a reputable like Roman Catholic church that kind of explains the theology of what they do. Here's what was fascinating. Baptism takes away original sin. All personal sins and all punishment due to sin, it makes the baptized person a participant in the divine life of the Trinity through sanctifying grace, the grace of justification, so on and so forth. So this is where the reason they're different, it's there's a lot of reasons, but I think the biggest one is the reason Kyle and I do infant dedications is because we don't inherently believe that getting baptized as an infant washes away your sin. Because that's the push in the traditional context. If, because this is horrible to think about, but it's where this comes from. If you have an infant that dies prior to being able to logically make that decision to accept Christ, like before they die, then in theory, the Catholic Church would say they're covered because they're baptized. You know, and that's where Kyle and I can't remember the exact, it's the exact phrasing, but it's basically like the innocence of a child, and then we can get into that whole theological
the age debate. Of innocence?
Yes, yep. that whole thing. But I just want to bring that up too, because different churches will have different stances on the significance of baptism. They all kind of follow the same track. They accomplish two things, like you said, whether it's, you know, baptism and dedication versus confirmation, baptism, whatever it is. It's accomplishing the same thing, saying as a baby, we're doing this for you. As an adult, you're making this decision for yourself.
Right.
But it's also just fascinating to see the different weight that different denominations put on it. Because I believe, and again, I have to look this up too, like within a traditional Baptist context, you need to be need to be baptized if you truly believe in Jesus.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Catholic Church would say the same thing. The Lutheran Church, I believe, would say the same thing. You know, churches vary in their emphasis on baptism, ranging from you have to be baptized in order to truly be saved and go to heaven to, you know, you should get, like, there's no good reason not to. Like, you should do it. But I want to just kind of point out and dive a little bit into why our churches, you know, practice baptism the way that we do. And it's a little bit of an unfair comp to just say, well, we don't have any records in the Bible of infants being baptized.
Right.
Well, the reason we don't have any records of infant being baptized is somewhat due to the fact that Christianity was brand new. Mm-hmm. All the people hearing about Christianity in the Bible are hearing about it for the first time. So you don't have, you know, this family that has grown up in the church for generations and right. Now they have a new baby and they're going to baptize them. Like, we don't have that. Obviously, you know, there were people that came to faith and then had kids in biblical times, in, you know, during the New Testament period, but we don't have records
right.
of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
Every baptism that we have in the Bible is either an adult being baptized, or there are some instances where you could argue it's a little ambiguous, where it says, you know, like, I think Cornelius is one where it's like Cornelius and his whole household
right.
were exactly baptized.
In Acts, yep.
And so, you know, you can make the argument if they, you know, was that the adults in his household? Was that the adult? You can make the argument that it was the adult men in his household. You could make the argument that it was his entire household. He just didn't have infants. You can make the argument that it was his entire household and it may have included infants. We don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly would say it's dangerous to build your entire argument for infant baptism based on
conjecture,
Cornelius and his household.
Yep.
The other thing that I would point to as a big reason as to why we do baptism and child dedication the way that we do is that we do know that this is the exact pattern displayed by Jesus. when Jesus was young, Mary and Joseph took him to the temple to be dedicated.
As was Samuel.
As was Samuel. You know, we see later on, I mean, Jesus is 30
mm-hmm.
by the time he technically is baptized, you know, by John the Baptist. Again, a little bit different because John the Baptist was not, you know, practicing his ministry when Jesus was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's a little bit of a difference to that. The other thing that I'll say as to why, you know, I don't think that a Christian needs to be baptized more than once. Like I, you know, if I was baptized when I was 35 and, you know, first came to faith at 35, got baptized, and then, you know, I'm like, oh, you know what? I changed churches and I want to get baptized again here. John chapter 13, when Jesus is talking about washing his disciples' feet, he uses that as an analogy where, and he's specifically talking about salvation more and repentance more so, but his point is you're already clean because you put your faith in me.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to wash your feet, you know, when necessary. Like you need to, you don't have to get re-saved every time you mess up and come back to the Lord. You just have to repent. And I think that pattern is true in baptism as well. We don't have to get re-baptized. It's just, yeah, I got baptized. Okay, I just need to spend some time in repentance.
Yeah.
And you know, metaphorically wash my feet a little bit.
Yeah. One thing that I have seen, and this is where I think it'd be a good dialogue because I've done it, but I know for some people it's one of those things that the language that we would use within our denomination is that baptism is a symbol, right? Like there's no actual real tangible significance behind the act itself. It's purely a symbol. I always say, you know, my wedding ring doesn't make me married. The fact that we went and got married makes me married. My wedding ring is purely a symbol of the fact that that happened. Baptism's the same way. You don't need to be baptized, quote unquote, to be saved. It is just a symbol of your salvation in Jesus. So you extrapolate all that forward, and I've had people that have come to me and say, you know, I got baptized years ago, but I really turned away from the Lord. Or, you know, I really was far off and just like, I've just really reconnected with the Lord and I want to do something tangible to symbolize that. Are you okay if I get baptized again? And it really is a case-by-case situation. I want to know, okay, like what did that look like? Is it just like I got baptized at this church 7 months ago and they ticked me off, so I want to get baptized here? Let's have a different conversation. But I've also had places where it's like, no, like this is a true different stage for me and I just need to do something to, you know, because again, what does it symbolize? Death to life. You go down into the water. That's Christ's death. You come out of the water. That's his resurrection. So I just need something to symbolize that. Absolutely. Like we can talk about that. And so I would just kind of love to dialogue back and forth if you see it the same way, if you see things a little differently, because I do know that's a little bit more of a, not a black and white as much as it's more a individual case by case thing.
Yeah, it's not a salvation issue.
Yep.
Where if I get saved and immediately I'm like, hey, let's go find a lake, I'm going to get baptized, and on the drive to the lake I get in a car accident and die, I'm going to heaven.
Yep. Totally. It's
not like you have to get baptized in order to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the churches like the Catholic Church would, you know, that's where, you know, the doctrine of baptism taking away original sin, I don't see that.
Right.
You know, personally. Mm-hmm. In scripture, I don't see where that's patterned. We don't see that patterned in the New Testament. The practice of infant baptism it started earlier than this, but I would say throughout church history, it really gained prominence in periods like the Black Plague, where infants were dying at an alarming rate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody was dying at an alarming rate, mm-hmm. but infants were dying at an alarming rate, and parents wanted to make sure that their kids went to heaven. And so they would baptize them as infants to in an attempt to ensure that. Unfortunately, throughout church history, when humans decide things for themselves, they don't always get it right. I don't think that you need to point past indulgences to prove my point. That's a fun rabbit trail if you guys don't know what indulgences are and want to Google it.
We're not talking about like indulging in brownies a la mode.
No. We are talking about
the actual
church leaders doing, yes. making bad calls. And so that's where I think it's important for us to just remember that it's not a salvation issue. And I do think that, I don't know, I wonder, cause the other thing that I hear from students, you mentioned the age of innocence or the age of reckoning. There's different, you know, phrases it goes by. The basic idea is that there is an age at which you are now responsible for your own salvation. You know, I believe that God is a God. So God is a just God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if God lays down a rule and we find ourselves on the wrong side of that rule, then we're going to end up on the wrong side of the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a graceful mm-hmm. God and a merciful God. And, you know, not to get too deep into the theology, but if you have an infant who... their parents are not Christians, infant, and then the infant dies, to say that that infant has a different spiritual eternity because than a baby whose parents sprinkled water on them when mm-hmm. they were young, to say that that baby has a different spiritual eternity just feels so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the age of reckoning, and there's people that will argue what it is, but it's this idea that up until a certain point, like you can't make a conscious decision to accept right. Jesus as your savior.
Right.
And so you're not responsible for that. But once you hit that age, that's when you are responsible for that.
Yeah.
And people will argue, is there an age that you should not baptize somebody before that age? Thoughts?
It's very fascinating because my wife and I have had this conversation personally. Like, we did a baptism service last year. My son's 5 and a half, and he expressed interest in wanting to do it. So we very much asked him, like, why? Like, why do you want to get baptized? And you could tell he was getting there, but wasn't fully there. And so mm-hmm. we decided, you know, not yet. Like, love the enthusiasm, but we had the conversation of, like, until he knows without a shadow of a doubt, this is... And so here's... It's hard for me to say that I will never do XYZ age and below, because I've met, you know, 8-year-olds that are more mature than 15-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way around too, yeah. you know? And so it to me is one of those things where I have a hard time drawing a line in the sand and saying absolutely not. But I will say, like, until you're probably 6, 7, probably 7 or 8, I would have to say, I want to have like a legit conversation, or have our kids pastor have a legit conversation and ask, why do you want to get baptized? And like, have a legitimate answer, you know, because like, at the same time, you can also kind of, kids are smart. They know what you mm-hmm. want to hear, you mm-hmm. know, because I love Jesus. Cool. Like, but like, what does that mean to you? You know, yeah. like, I want to have yep. that next question.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have the right answer, like, that's great. I mean, again, in this baptism service last summer, I can't remember how old she was, but she was young. I mean, she was probably for sure less than 10. but she had just this infectious, real relationship with Jesus. Yeah. And so our kids pastor baptized her. Like, we're not going to get in the way of that. But it did come with conversations and understandings and everything else. So that's just my, I can't say definitively this is the age, but there's some pretty good parameters you can put around it.
Yeah. I think that there's, because like I have kids, youth kids that'll come to me like, hey, I got baptized when I was 9, but I don't really remember it. And I feel like my parents just wanted me to do it.
Yeah.
Can I do it again? Okay, let's have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and hopefully you have a conversation like you said. I like some of those questions where, hey, let's talk so that this doesn't happen when you're, you know, 9. But even, you know, I have students that they'll get baptized. Like I had a student, the last time we did baptisms in a youth service, I had a student that said, you know, hey, I got baptized a few years ago, but I want to get baptized here because like you're my pastor. And I said, no, because that's not the point of baptism. I probably said it nicer than that, but like that's not the point of getting baptized, because I want my youth pastor to baptize me. That it, you don't have to be credentialed to baptize somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Like have dad baptize you if you want. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not the point of baptism, that it has to be ordained by somebody in ministry. And so that's where I think we can get caught up sometimes in, you know, my baptism has to be this great experience that I remember. It's got to have the right people there. I don't think so. I think the baptism, the point of that, now somebody should be there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The point, if the point of baptism is declaring publicly the decision that you made privately, and it's a symbol of that decision you made privately, well, if nobody's there, then you're not declaring it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's got to be there, or some people need to be there. But I don't think that I do. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do think there is, and I'm not saying this is for everybody, but there are moments where it feels like it has to be this perfect thing. I bring it back to a marriage. If your wedding isn't perfect, you don't redo it. You know, like
right.
you don't say, hey, let's run that back in a few years. Like, that's all right. It doesn't have to be, you know, perfect. And again, if you're, I draw the line in the sand and go like, if you're in a different spot of your journey and you've taken maybe some different routes and this is what you feel like you need to do to make things right with God, I have no qualms with that. Like that's, I'll baptize you again. It is a heart issue. If it is about the experience, then I'm like, like, because in a roundabout way, that flirts with some legalism, you know?
Yeah.
And
even the concept, like I got baptized 8 years ago, but now I really feel like I understand my faith. Like, you don't have to get baptized every time you level up in your faith. There's going to be many times in your life where, like, you have some, maybe a bigger eye-opening experience. Like, oh my gosh, like, I now understand God in a way that I didn't before.
Yep.
I should get baptized again. Not the point.
Yep.
But I do. So here's a fun question for you. If somebody got baptized as an infant, would you encourage them to get baptized again as an adult?
Like, I encourage them?
Yeah, like I'm asking you, like, would you personally say, like, I would encourage you to get baptized as an adult?
If they want to. Like, I mean, to me, it starts with baptism is an outward symbol of an inward change.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like the Lord is calling you to do it, I'll encourage it, but I'm not going to go up to a student, if we're youth pastors here, you know, student A, it just gets wrecked at camp, comes back from camp, has a newfound faith, you know, everything else. Like, I'm not going to go up there and say, hey, you should get baptized. Now, at the same time, if we're doing a baptism service, and I'm like, they actually, I'll ask them, like, have you ever thought about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like, I don't want to be the reason someone gets baptized, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want them to be like, well, Derek said I should do it, so I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want, like, I'll plant the seed that about what baptism means, but I never want to be the reason that someone thinks they have to be baptized. It goes back to the biblical circumcision. Some people thought they had to be circumcised to truly make their faith real. Like, that's not what, again, now baptism is.
Boy, can we thank the Lord that we got rid of that one.
Amen.
Yeah, that's, yikes, man.
But, like, to answer your question, like, am I going to, I'll suggest, but I will, if someone's been baptized like I was as a baby, I'm not going to say, hey, you should get baptized. I think if God's doing something in your life, sure.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But I never want to be the reason someone does it.
That makes sense.
Do you disagree?
I don't think I really have a strong... So let me clarify. I agree with, like, you... I don't want to, like, force somebody to get baptized.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be their decision. I like the difference between, hey, you should get baptized, and hey, what do you think about getting baptized? Even a subtle difference like that puts the question on them instead of the demand almost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know necessarily where I stand on, like, if you were baptized as an infant, should you get baptized again as an adult? I could see both sides of that. You know, you're not baptized, like, it's not necessary for salvation, but it is something, like, it is something patterned by Jesus, and there's a difference when you're the one making the decision. In full disclosure, part of the reason that I asked is because our church bylaws currently stipulate that to be a member, you have to be baptized. And
in water and spirit, or just water?
Water, I think.
It's a different discussion for a different day. I'm just generally curious.
I believe it says water. If you vamp for 2 seconds here, I actually think I have a copy of the bylaws in my drawer over here.
I don't know what vamp means, so I'll stall, which I'm guessing means that the works same too. Thing. I will say, I don't think we have those bylaws. I mean, I think when we have the membership application, we ask if they have, but I don't.
So it does say, so there's two separate lines. There's one that talks about, you know, baptism in the Holy Spirit or you know, however you want to phrase that. But the one says to be baptized in water by immersion, except where deemed physically impossible. And so that's where... You know, they, and it's something that we've talked about as a staff and as a church, as we, you know, just went through a round of membership classes, and, you know, there's always the other one. Yeah. Anyways, I won't get into our bylaws right now, but, I think it's an interesting conversation. It's not one that I feel like I have a firm answer on. I would lean toward, like, yeah, I do think that you should get baptized as an adult, but I'm not going to force you to do it. I do agree with you there. I think that's good.
I agree with myself as well.
That's not surprising.
I'm trying.
Yep. I think that does it for the baptism episode. We appreciate all of our faithful listeners. 107 episodes in the books. So with that being said, I think it's about time that Derek and I go practice our baptism form. Goodbye. Goodbye.